Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
That's Opaque from Wary and Strange, the new album from Tennessee-born and raised musician Amethyst Kia. Her first album, 2013's Dig, was an acoustic-style Americana record, which she followed up with an indie rock-leaning EP in 2017 called Amethyst Kia and Her Chest of Glass. In 2019, she leaned back into roots and folk music as a member of Our Native Daughters, the four-piece banjo-based band gathered by friend of the show Rhiannon Giddens. Now, in 2021, on Kia's new work, Wary and Strange, she made an album that mixes her folk and rock roots and explores personal stories of trauma and self-empowerment. Kia is a nominee for 3 Americana Music Awards, including Song of the Year for her solo version of Black Myself, which already earned a Grammy nomination when she originally recorded it with Our Native Daughters. We'll get to hear a special performance of the version that appears on her new record. That's going to happen in just a bit. But first, Amethyst Kia joins me for an All of It listening party. Amethyst, welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It sounds so great to hear Opaque beyond the radio. I was like, oh yeah, my album's out, all the songs are out now, so this is so great. Thank you for having me.
It's real.
Yeah.
So I understand that this album went through a couple of iterations. When did you start it, and what was the original intention?
So I originally started recording it in 2018, actually not too long before recording songs were Native Daughters. And there, honestly, there was no, like, I didn't really have a clear, like, overarching vision, mostly because, you know, in the past when I've recorded things, there's always been, like, this budget limit. And so I've always been mildly, like, anxious and panicky when it comes to recording, because I'm like, I can't go over X amount of dollars because, like, you know, I don't have the money to do it. Mm-hmm. So there's always this hint of, you know, of just of anxiety around recording. Anyway, so for this, it was like I walked in and I felt pressure to make a record because it had been a few years. And I'm just like, well, no, this is an opportunity, you know, to work with, I recorded the first set of recordings with Dirk Powell. So it was an opportunity to, like, you know, to work with him and, like, you know, to work with some of the other players that have, you know, worked with Rhiannon. And it was just a perfect, like, mix of things. But after the fact, what I realized is that it might have been a great, like, situation as far as me having the opportunity, but, like, I wasn't really ready. Like, in hindsight, I should have waited, but I think the way that I had to make this record, I think I just, what all the things that happened, I think just needed to happen because it was a learning experience. So I guess I don't want to say I have any regrets about, you know, about going in without having a thought process, because obviously over the next 2-3 years, I eventually, like, it worked things out to where I did find, you know, what makes the most sense. But the main reason why I pulled back from the original set of recordings, or a lot of them, is because it was sort of like me kind of rehashing songs that I'd already recorded, or putting songs on that I didn't really actually play that much anymore because I felt this need to, like, just fill the record up with things so I can have a record to put out. And, like, trying to create art in that way is very it's very difficult, and you never really feel fully settled with anything because you're kind of just desperately putting something together. And, you know, what I learned from that experience is that that's not the way to make a record that I am going to be 100% happy with, because I'm going to always know that I rushed or that I put something together that, you know, I did it because I felt like I needed to do it and not because it was really coming from a place of, like, a really well thought out, like, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So after Songs of Our Native Daughters, which really kind of opened me up out of this kind of writer's block that I'd actually had for, like, about a year or so. And so then I started writing more songs, and then there were other songs that I'd written as, like, rock songs that I would play with my band whenever I had a band on the road. And I was, like, compartmentalizing the rock stuff with my acoustic folk stuff. And I eventually was like, I should just put all of these songs on one record. Like, why am I?
Right.
I don't know. I don't really know. I still don't fully understand why I was separating the two. I guess, I don't know. I think there's maybe a part of me that felt like I had this kind of split. I kind of felt like I was split between two worlds, where I have this one outlet that I want to be rock, and then the other one that I want to be folk. And I think my brain created that. And then I realized, like, these are all my songs, and I can just put them all on a record, you know, and
they're all mine.
And I was like, so I went to Echo Mountain Studio. And at that point, I ended up parting ways with Dirt amicably, just because I was like, now I have a better idea of, like, what I want my sound to be and the direction I want to go in. So we amicably parted ways. He was super understanding and supportive, and, like, you know, all he ever wanted was for me to make a record that I want, whatever iteration that took. So he was really cool about it. So I went to Echo Mountain Studio and recorded with and at this point, there wasn't, like, a producer per se when these songs were recorded. So it was just like, let's get these songs down and kind of see what happens. And then we, you know, ended up shopping, you know, some recordings from the Dirk sessions and all of the ones from the Echo Mountain sessions. And then Mark Williams from Concord is A&R guy from Concord reached out. I met him in January of 2020 during the Grammys week. I had a day off, but met with him. We really hit it off. And then he got me in touch with Tony Berg, and I met him, like, in that next month to kind of just get a feel for, like, if we'll work well together. And the first song we actually ended up recording was Fancy Drones, because he was just like, let's just record something just so we can get a feel for each other's video.
Right.
And I was like, well, hey, here's the song that I wrote with the guys I played with back home. And I played it. And then there was a drummer, like, in the next building over that he works with that just so happened to be around. So, like, we ended up laying down a drum track, guitar track. I did lead and background vocals. And then he disappears for a minute and comes back with a bass harmonica. And I'm like, what the heck is he going to do with that? And then that big, thick, like, loud bass sound that's on the record, there is no bass guitar on that song. It's all bass harmonica playing the bass part. So at that moment, I was like, this is the guy to do this. Because, like, the way that he thinks about, like, not just music, but just sounds and tones, like, there's some samples that are on some of the songs on the record. Just the way that he thinks about putting music together and, like, the limitless possibility of combining different things and having familiarity with, like, with Americana music, with, like, R&B, with rock, with blues, like, having this wide familiarity with all these different genres, he was able to help me, like, combine essentially what was my alternative and folk music influences, and then and be able to make a cohesive record, because when we brought the songs to him, it was a thing where, because they were so starkly different, recorded in different places and just stylistically just very different, you know, and this was maybe about a couple of days before I flew out to Los Angeles back in July last year. He was like, in order to make this work, we're gonna have to go by song, but we're more than likely gonna have to re-record most of it, because there's some ideas and tones that I have in my head to fit what you want, but like, I don't know that I'm gonna be able to do it with what you have recorded here already.
So you have to start
even
over.
And even for me, both times that I recorded vocals, I was exhausted. And so, like, my voice, while to most people, it still would have had presence and would have had power, but, like, because he and my management, like, everybody has, like, they listen to, like, artists and music, like, for a living, and after hearing what I could do, Tony was like, whenever we recorded Fancy Jones, he's like, that's the voice that I know you have. He's like, I could tell in these recordings that you have an amazing voice, but you definitely you're not at 100%. You're tired. And he's worked with enough singers to know when someone sounds tired, you know? And I was like, well, yeah, that's true. I was really tired. And like, if I need to re-record these vocals, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to like make this album be the best it could possibly be. So going into the studio in July after, you know, not really traveling, working from home, making videos and sending to venues and stuff like that, like being home, having a routine, eating better, sleeping better, all of that. Mm-hmm. When I got in the studio, that it was the most fun I've ever had in the studio. Because for the first time in my life, I was at ease. I was well rested. I was well hydrated. I was present. In the past, when I've recorded, I didn't realize that I was never fully present when I was recording things, because I was always like in the back of my mind, I gotta keep it going. Gotta hurry up. I've only got so much money. I can't be here any longer than I need to. But then the thing that's the huge advantage of being with a label is that they do have the money to facilitate you being able to create something where you can like stop and take a breath, take your time, think about things.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, I was well rested. I had a wider window of time to really settle into things. And like,
it just sounds like it was a really good
that I worked with. Yeah.
It just sounds like it was
great.
It was unique. It was great. It really helps you create the record you wanted to make, which is Wary and Strange. My guest is Amethyst Kia. I do want to get to a couple of tracks. You know, the album is bookended by these two short songs, Soapbox and Soapbox Reprise. The first one's just a minute 37. You sing, don't want to hear your soapbox speech, don't want to know how you would do it, don't want to know how it should be, because I don't care what you think. Who are you singing to?
I am singing to, I'm speaking to society in general, but that's like the short answer. But more in detail, I grew up in like conservative white, suburban Bible Belt, everybody went to church three times a week, like all of that. And I was like the exact opposite of all of those things. My family was the opposite of all of those things. And so I really felt this sense of like strangeness and in-betweenness in a lot of situations. The older I got, especially in my teenage years, the more I started to realize that like I'm not quite fitting in. Because I don't go to church, or because I'm black, or because I'm, you know, not a femme presenting person. I got misgendered a lot because I would still wear like boys' clothes but I would get misgendered all the time, and like, so it was just a lot of different things that were happening. So Soapbox is, and so for many years I kind of just kept my thoughts and my feelings to myself as like a coping mechanism, because like my fear of rejection or abandonment was super strong. And I was like, I'd rather just keep all my thoughts and my feelings to myself than try to put myself out there and risk being rejected. So all through my early 20s, like I'd gone back in the closet when I moved from Chattanooga to Johnson City, because I was out when I was in high school, but then went back, and I was back in the closet for like 7 years because I started playing old time music, folk music. And I was around, like, you know, I was playing in places where there were a lot of like conservative people. Mm-hmm. And I was already dealing with being Black and like kind of not being super feminine. So it's like, I don't want to add on another thing to have to worry about. But it takes a toll on you when you keep to yourself. You don't really allow people to know you. It makes it difficult. So Soapbox was my way of being like, I'm not going to allow people's cherry picked values
to affect you,
to like
yeah.
control, like affect me any longer, you know?
Yeah.
And so Soapbox is sort of like, it ended up being like this intro for this record where I'm finally telling my story. And so, yeah, it kind of just all fell together once I finished that song. And I was like, well, this song is done. It doesn't need to be any longer. And I'm like, well, I'll just make it an intro. That's cool, because I've always loved albums that have intros and reprises and stuff like that.
Let's take a listen to it.
It worked out.
Let's take a listen to Soapbox from Amethyst Kia.
Yeah.
Speech, don't wanna know how you would do it, don't wanna know how it should be, cause I don't care what you think, you can keep your sophistry, save my brain from atrophy, I have my own hand that feeds, so I don't need what you think, don't wanna hear your soapbox speech, don't wanna know how you would do it, don't wanna know how it should be. I don't care what you think. You can keep your sophistry.
Save Excellent use of the word sophistry from Amethyst Kia. The name of the album is Wary and Strange. You told us a little bit about the bass harmonica instead of the bass on Fancy Drones and on Hangover Blues. This is industrial sound, but there's a sort of woozy keyboard sound in Sleeping Queen. I want to play a little bit of it. What do you want people to listen for?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think, like, so, I mean, that is so hard to even say, like, that song has so many different layers to it. I would say, listen for the bass line and, like, the clavinet with the wall, like, that's the thing that's happening. I think that might be what you're talking about, the sort of bluesy sound. I think there's like a Wurlitzer and there's, like, a clavinet with a wah sound on it. And then also during the chorus, I don't know how far you're going to get into the song, but like in the chorus, there's this harmony that it took me forever to get because it was so high, but it kind of gives almost like this, like a Stevie Wonder kind of vibe. I can't remember the name of the song. It's the one that got sampled for Gangster's Paradise. I forgot the name of the original song. Anyway.
It's going to make me crazy. Now it's going to make me crazy. We'll figure it out.
I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, there's like this really cool harmony part in the thing that I've always been super stoked about too. So yeah, if you get to that part, check that out too.
All right. Well, let's check it out. This is Amethyst Kia, Sleeping Queen.
See humans as we are. Great beauty and great horror. They are made. We'll be right back.
That is Sleeping Queen from Amethyst Kia's new album, Wary and Strange. We think it's Pastime Paradise from Song in the Key of Life. That's what my team is thinking.
Okay.
We'll know for sure because the internet will tell us.
Well, what's funny is, like, I thought you said you were playing Opaque, so I was describing Opaque and not Sleeping Queen.
Oh, all right.
I was describing the wrong song. I'm so sorry.
No worries. We went with you. My guest is Amethyst Kia. The name of the album is Wary and Strange. We'll have more with Amethyst, including a performance of Black Myself after the break. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Amethyst Kia. The name of the new album is Wary and Strange. So on your thank yous on your album, Amethyst, you write, "This album is dedicated to my father, Carl Franklin Phillips, and my late mother, Terry LaJoy Holt Phillips. It's your love and care for me that started it all. The guitar you gave me in the summer of 2000 was the seed that grew and took me beyond my wildest dreams. I love you both always." That is so lovely, and I want to know what happened in the summer of 2000.
Yeah, so the summer of 2000, I think I was at a point where, you know, I was huge on playing sports, so I played, like, basketball and a lot of recreational sports and stuff, but I also, like, really just started, like, getting interested in music, and my parents, like, had this general idea to help me be, like, a well-rounded individual, and that was to, like, play some kind of team sport, make good grades in school, and then also, like, play an instrument of my choice. So, like, just whatever I wanted to do, because they didn't want to, like, pick something for me, because, you know, it usually doesn't work out when parents pick stuff out for their kids. It doesn't always work. So, I picked a guitar, so we went to, I lived in Chattanooga. So there was this store in Ringgold, Georgia, called the Soundpost, which is not there anymore, and I'm very sad about it because one time I went back to visit, and I was hoping I'd, like, maybe see some of the people that I used to see when I went there, but it is no more. Rest in peace. But I went to the Soundpost, and my parents bought me a used late 80s Fender acoustic dreadnought. And it was like $100. And they bought me some software. It was like a CD-ROM that, like, with a dude, like, teaching the chords and stuff. So that's how it all started. And I was obsessed. Like, I, all summer was just, like, me in front of the computer, just, like, learning chords and strumming patterns. And then it kind of grew from that into me learning how to play Good Riddance, Time of Your Life. So that was, like, the first song I ever learned how to play, because it had, like, the C, G, and D chords that I'd learned. So then I really started leading into listening to a lot of pop punk and rock and metal. And then eventually I would get turned on to Tori Amos and really, like, get inspired to write songs. But that summer started it all, and my parents, like, were just always, like, they were so happy that I was enjoying it so much, and so they just, you know, let me just go to town on, you know, learning new songs. They'd buy me VHSs and DVDs. You know, they were just always really supportive in letting me, like, have that as my outlet. So, yeah, it was great.
Let's play another track.
Both my parents also love music, too. So, yeah.
That's always good. Let's play Hangover Blues, which is on this album, but it also appeared on your 2017 EP. Let's play a little bit of it, and we can talk about it on the other side. This is Amethyst Kia and Hangover Blues. Morning.
that song Hangover Blues, like Black Myself, you've recorded before, and you have new recordings on this album, Wary and Strange. How did it feel to reimagine those songs for this record?
I mean, it's really satisfying because for me, you know, obviously, like when I first started performing, it was reinterpreting old time songs. And so I think for me, the opportunity to reimagine a song that I've written, I kind of feel like that's always going to be part of what I do, because I think it's interesting for, especially like listening to other people, like take songs that they didn't write, but like make it their own and like add a different perspective. I think adding different perspectives to songs that already exist is like just as interesting as like writing original songs. And so for me, you know, with Hangover Blues, the song started out as like, I wrote it with that acoustic guitar lick. Like that's how I originally wrote it. And when I worked it out in a band setting, it was an opportunity to just like, hey, let's just do something totally different. I'll play something different on rhythm guitar. We'll have like we'll have the organ kind of like take the lead on, you know, playing the intro, like, you know, just like experimenting with different things. And it was really fun to do that. And on this, it was like, I did want to do like in it, you know, like a version that was based around that guitar lick and just see what would happen in that creative process. I didn't really have anything specific in mind I wanted to do other than let's like build out around this guitar lick and see what comes of it. Cause I did want to experiment with having like a more like a country blues kind of grittier kind of vibe. And then with Black Myself, I actually initially hadn't planned on recording it for this record, but when I started, when I got to the studio with Tony, he's actually the one that suggested, you know, have you ever thought about re-recording it? And I was like, yeah, I think I would like to record like a more like a rock and roll kind of version. Like I would love to do that at some point. And he's like, well, what if we did it for this record? And I thought about it and I'm like, well, I mean, it fits in with like the theme of Wary and Strange. You know, it's a song about being othered. Yeah. So it definitely fits there.
And also, let me know, like,
you know, oh yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You know what? I wanna play a little bit of it before we run out of time. So I wanna make sure people know.
Oh, sure. Sorry, yeah, I talk a lot.
I love every part of it, but I like your music as much, so I wanna make sure we get to that too. The name of the album.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Is Wary and Strange. It's from Amethyst Kia. You shared this performance of Black Myself with us. Amethyst, you have been a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your music.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. Hope to talk to y'all again soon.
Here's a performance of Black Myself from Amethyst Kia.